open for discussion. And now your host, Michael Knight.
It's a gateway to the weekend, Friday afternoon on the agenda. 12:15, Michael Knight here in our Palatial Radio Studios, and I'd ask you to consider this. We all have some fears. Of course we do. Some are real, some are irrational, some are just phobias. But do you have a fear of being judged? It happens all the time. You're walking down the street, people driving by, they're judging you, whether you know it or not. You're driving in traffic, the cars in front of you, behind you, next to you, they judge you. Talking in your workplace, perhaps after five drinks at the Tiki Torch Lounge, oh yeah, you will be judged. The variety of judgment behavior is so to be expected, and yet we, for the most part, do not really relish the joy of being judged. I don't like it. A lot of people don't like it. Maybe it's my own problem here. What about this business of constructive criticism? Is that judgment or is that helpful? Or is it just a package that your boss brings in trying to destroy your self-worth on behalf of the corporation? In the hopes, of course, that after you finish trembling at your desk, you're going to be a much better person to know in the break room. To be judged, we would at least hope for a qualified individual if we're going to be judged. If not armed with the proper qualifications, at least, why wear the black robe if you're not prepared? Why sit in the legal-style throne high above sea level if you're not able to look at the wretches in the dock and give them an even break? The judge, a fabulous luncheon spread of rare delicacies back in your room? Probably not. What do they do in their chambers anyway? The judge in our lives. When one cannot decide, what's to be done? Who will decide? That's really what the judge has to do. The one with the experience must decide. To weigh the issues, to listen, to deliberate, to conclude, and then hand down from the bench the decision on behalf of the court. I can handle that. I just can't stand being judged. Now let's meet our very special guest. She's here to join us in the studio, running for her office, and the current judge and also running for judge of Chelan County Superior Court is Kristen Ferreira. Nice to have you here again.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Do you like being judged?
I don't particularly like being judged, no.
And yet you do it, but you know, you refer to it in a legal sense, so it's a very different process, isn't it?
It's very different.
You're not just making up your mind based on something.
No. Actually, judges typically should not be judgmental, as we would define that.
Good one.
So it's really important that judges come in from an unbiased perspective. Which, the definition of judgmental, I don't have it memorized, but it is a very different perspective than coming in from an unbiased point of view.
How do you stay unbiased? We all have our biases. We all have our life experience. We all have our past and what we hope will be our future. And in that, there are some prejudices that we may or may not be aware of. How do you stay unbiased?
I was raised to actually look at an issue or a situation from all sides. That was just something that my mother especially ingrained in me. And so I started at an early age making sure that I was thinking about all perspectives of a situation. But then when I was in college, I majored in cultural anthropology. And that is something that we really focused on was when you are looking at a situation or an issue or your opinion on something, is it because of objective reasons, evidence, or is it because of how you've been raised in your culture or in your family? And so it's always been very important for me to look at why am I feeling this way about the situation? Why am I thinking this way about the situation? Is there something objective I can look to that's making me think that, or is it some bias? Right. And so it's really important each time to make sure that your opinion, especially as a judge, is based on evidence, not on some feeling that you may have about something.
And do you find it easy to go into that state of mind of being the judge or being weighing the evidence? When you sit there at the bench, do you just assume that persona of fairness and unbiasedness?
I think I do, yes. I mean, it's probably not easy for everybody, but it's a part of who I am, and it's also a part of, I feel like that is a very important responsibility as a judge, and I take that very seriously. So I try to keep that in mind every second that I'm in either on the bench or looking at a case.
Does the judge have trouble with lawyers sometimes, or can the judge just say, that's not the way we're going to do it, let's just get back on business here?
We do have to do that sometimes.
Lawyers
are advocates, and right. If they are believing strongly in their client's case, sometimes they can even get emotional, and not crying emotional, just
right.
worked up. And and so sometimes we have to rein that back in. Our job as judges, in part, is to control the courtroom. And we do sometimes act as referees, and we have to make sure that everybody's playing by the rules.
What's it like running for the office of for the judgeship? It's a very different demand on the, we don't ask this of anyone else in the legal profession. We don't ask for lawyers to get elected before they represent us.
It's complicated as a judge because we have restrictions on what we're allowed to talk about. While campaigning, yes. We have certain restrictions that are on us that are not on other candidates. For example, we cannot ask for any money personally. We're not allowed to know anything about any fundraising. Other people have to do that. It used to be that judges couldn't even ask for endorsements from people, but now we can do that. We can't talk about any political issues. We can't talk about issues that are related to perhaps a type of case that would come in front of us. We can't say how we would rule in a particular case. We're just not allowed to do that.
There are so many cases being discussed in the national media right now. Does anyone ever ask you, are you a Republican judge? Are you a Democratic judge? What kind of judge are you?
All the time. Yes, they do ask me that, and I make sure that they know that we are a nonpartisan. It's a nonpartisan position. And politics is not allowed to enter into any decisions that we make, at any level. And at the superior court level, I think people sometimes get confused because they look at appellate court judges and you see on the national news and the Supreme Court judges and the nominations and what goes on there. And at the superior court level, we're handling kind of the nuts and bolts issues of the community, very basic and I think important. I don't say basic as it's a very important.
Basically, like in the building blocks of civilization.
Exactly. Exactly. We're dealing with families. We're dealing with crimes. We're dealing with businesses and when they get in disagreements and employment. We're dealing with the fact-based issues, and so we're not dealing with the policy. We're just applying the law to the facts.
If someone were to come and sit in your courtroom for a period of a month, would they see every kind of case before you?
Yes, they would. A full month, especially if it was, so every 3 months we're on the, what they call on the criminal calendar. Sometimes they call it presiding, but, we have a presiding judge. That's Judge Leslie Allen, but they call the calendar the presiding calendar, and that means that we would have the criminal calendar Mondays and Wednesdays. We have the domestic violence calendar on Tuesdays. We have family law hearings and trials mixed in amongst there. On other months, we'll have a week each month that is our criminal trial week, and then we'll also have civil trials that are scheduled for those times. So, it definitely runs the gamut throughout the month. You would see everything.
So this is the work you do in your robe at the bench. It's absolutely required for there to be some backstop to the justice system. And I guess it's the judge who finally puts the last word in.
Yes.
Or the appellate judge if the case goes on.
Right, exactly.
But some judge is going to be the last word for
yes.
the most part. Now, what's it like with that responsibility under the law to be campaigning for a vote? Because people want to know what do they want to know? What do your constituents say to you? Because a lot of people say, I never vote for judges because they don't know who they are. I don't know what they mean. I don't know what they stand for.
Right.
And you would think every judge would stand for the same sort of equanimity.
And that is how it should be. It really should be that way, that we should all, a judge, anybody who's running for this position should care about the same things and have the same, I guess, philosophy in terms of being a judge. But it's really difficult for people to vote for judges because we can't talk about the issues and we're not allowed to talk about any of the things that people want to hear about during campaign season.
It makes it uncomfortable if you're ringing doorbells and right, you introduce yourself and they say, well, tell me something about yourself. And you say, well, I can't.
Right. Well, and what I usually do is I talk about my background and my experience and what I've been doing on the bench and the types of cases that we work on and my perspective on how to handle myself as a judge. I also let them know, one of the things I direct people to is my endorsements because people who have worked with me and who know me that are endorsing me, that's a very good indication of who I am as a person. And then they can go talk to that person and say, well, why are you supporting Judge Ferreira? And then they can explain that. And then the other thing that some people have done is they've actually come into court, and I've had some people say, oh, I came into court because I really wanted to know who it is that I'm thinking about voting for. And I've had people say, because I saw you in court, now I'm supporting you.
It's interesting because the courtroom is a public place for the most part, and citizens can come in and witness what's going on.
Absolutely. It's a public, it is for the most part, except for very specific cases, everything has to be done in public.
There are some restrictions in federal court that I've encountered even as a member of the press, but it's still a public place.
Right. Exactly.
When you go to work in the morning, what's on your desk when a judge sits down before they bring you out of chambers? What are you going over for the day?
It really depends on the types of cases that I have. So if it's a non-criminal calendar month, I'm usually dealing with family law cases on a daily basis, unless I have some sort of a trial or a summary judgment hearing. And so a typical day I would have several family law hearings, and so I would read through, and most of our cases are all online now, so I go into my computer and I look up the case and I read through everything that has been that's been submitted to the court, and actually I don't do this the day of, I do this several days in advance,
right.
But and make sure that and especially because I'm taking on cases that other judges have had before, I will also go back and look at what the judges' orders and rulings have been in previous hearings so that I can get a little bit of a background on the case. So
maybe you can explain why case law is so important in court. The decisions previous to the ones that you're arguing right now are important. They're part of your argument.
They are, and in different ways. Case law, when it comes to cases that aren't related to that case, so not hearings having to do with this particular case, but other cases are really relevant because that is, we have our statutes and we have the constitutions, and I say constitutions because the federal and state,
right.
And but we also have case law, and we have a lot of case law, and that case law helps us determine if there's a statute that's confusing, maybe it clarifies that statute. There is actually a set of rules that is just within case law, depending on the type of case. And so it's really important whenever we're dealing with a case that we know what precedent, that's what we call it, what law and precedent we're dealing with.
Because, even if it's only one case, it's still important?
Well, on family law cases, you're not dealing with that as
right.
much. And so in terms of the previous hearings and orders, what's important about that is to know where are we at, what's the history in this case, what have the parties been told in the past to do, have they complied, because that will actually build on itself and can be relevant when you're dealing with, for example, a contempt motion. Okay, is this the first time that this has been, there's been contempt, or have there been other contempt orders? So that's important too.
Did you ever send a lawyer to jail for contempt?
No.
Or to cool their heels for an afternoon?
No, I have not.
Probably good. I would think that's a reflection on the lawyers who argue before you.
We have some very talented and very professional attorneys in Chelan County. It's a very, I'm really impressed with our local bar.
You mentioned family law. Is that a big portion of what the judges in our county are handling?
It is. It's
50% or more?
Maybe 50%.
Wow.
Yeah, 40 to 50% of what we do is family law.
And those are cases that come before you because it's more complicated than just spouses not getting along, I assume.
Well, it's divorce, it's child custody, so divorce can include spousal maintenance, which we used to call alimony, dividing the assets and the liabilities at the end of the case, or deciding who gets to live in the house, or deciding how much time this parent gets with the children, and many issues relating to child custody and then child support. There's domestic violence issues that we handle.
Or all above, everything at once, wrapped up.
And we see those too.
That's got to be a heartbreaker, or it can be.
It can be really difficult, especially when it seems like it's, as a judge, I'm having a difficult time getting through to somebody who is just damaging themselves and their relationship with their children, and they just can't see it.
Wow. You wonder how they ever got married. I mean, it's like they're the perfect opposites. You two people not only shouldn't have been married, you should have never met one another. But there you are. Now you have five kids besides.
Well, you never know. And people change over time. And sometimes they're perfect together at first. And what made them perfect makes them not work now. So
our special guest is Kristen Ferrara. She's running for Superior Court judgeship here in Chelan County. You'll have to vote for the judges. You really should do some homework and figure it out. That's why we're having all the candidates on. We'll be back with Kristen Ferrara. Ferrara. How's that?
That's
Ferrara, right,
right
after these words.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com. Check out Stan's Sporting Goods Department. Need ammo or reloading supplies? Check. Camo and outdoor apparel? Check. Fishing rods, reels, or lures? Check. Stan's now has 511 tactical gear, too. Let the helpful staff at Stan's...
Amazon.com.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
Judge Kristen Ferrara is running for election for the Supreme Court, for the Superior Court of Chelan County, and she's my guest this afternoon on The Agenda. And you want to give your website so people can read about, because there's so many limitations on the way a judge can campaign for office, maybe people will be able to read over your qualifications when they go to your website.
Yes, so my website is www.judgeferrara.com, and that's F-E-R-R-E-R-A. But other spellings will probably take you there,
probably
too. So I'm also on Facebook and Instagram under Judge Kristen Ferrara.
When you decided in high school to go to college, did you already know you were going to pursue a career in law?
No. It was something that I had thought about, but I didn't know any lawyers. I certainly had nobody in my family that was a lawyer.
Really?
And so, no, yeah, I'm the first lawyer. And even in, I guess I have a third cousin that's a lawyer, but I did not grow up around any lawyers.
No one able to tell you what it would be like 10 years down the road.
No. Actually, the person who had the biggest impact on me, and just in terms of applying for law school and understanding that process, was a good friend of mine that I grew up with. And she's the one that encouraged me to apply. At that point, I had been thinking about a career in law. And this was kind of progressed through undergraduate and then after undergraduate, because I took 4 years off in between undergraduate and law school.
Did you backpack around Europe?
I did not.
That was your opportunity. Now it's too late.
No, I actually worked as a server for catering for a year.
Everybody should be a waiter or a waitress sometime in their life.
I agree. Yeah. And I definitely was. And then I went to New Mexico, and I was in AmeriCorps Vista down in Gallup, New Mexico for a year. And then I worked as a fifth grade teacher. And then I went to Beijing, China, and taught English there at one of the universities there.
And then you went to law school.
And then I went to law school.
Wow. Now, you can't just say, I have this feeling about the law. I'd like to go to law school. There's more to it than that, right? What's the test called?
The LSAT, the Law School Admissions Test. And so when I finally did make the final decision that I wanted to go to law school, I got a couple of practice, well, not a couple. I got all of the practice tests that I could get a hold of and a couple of books that taught the basics of it. There's a logical reasoning portion, there's a logic games portion, and then, it's hard to explain what all those are, but there's different sections of the exam.
We always get to that point in the law where it gets hard to explain.
It's just, there's different sections to it, and there is a method to studying for it. And so I studied and took every practice exam I could get my hands on, and took the LSAT in Beijing. And at a university there. And then once I got my results back, then I started filling out my applications and sending in my applications. I got into a few different law schools, actually. I chose University of Washington, which is where I went to law school. And then after law school, actually during law school is when I first came out to Wenatchee to work. My second year of law school, I came to Jeffers Danielson, Son & Aylward, and I was a clerk there for a summer. And then they offered me the job after I graduated to come back. And so I spent my entire legal career has been here in Wenatchee.
Interesting. Now, how did you become appointed to be judge?
So, again, an application process. Judge Nakata announced that she was going to retire. And I believe it's on the Washington State Bar Association's website. maybe on the governor's website as well. There's an application form, and they tell you how to apply, and you fill it out. You have to list, I think it was a 13-page application with, for me, when after I'd filled it out, with you have to give 25 references and a writing sample.
25? I don't know if I could do that. That'd be stymied right there.
And it's very specific. It has to be 10 lawyers that you have worked with, lawyers or judges, and it has to then be 10 attorneys that you have worked against who have been on the other side of you, and then 5 non-attorneys who have worked with you in some capacity. And I really tried not to have too many people that worked with me at the firm. I was trying to get a diverse group of people that really know my work from outside of the law firm. And then a writing sample, some briefing that we had done, because they want to make sure that you can actually read case law, interpret it, and then put it into writing. And then there was an interview. And the interviews, everybody that applied for the position, I think there were 12, interviewed with the governor's counsel. So he has a staff of attorneys. And so 2 of them came out here and interviewed everybody. And then after they had the interviews, they selected me to go meet. Basically, at that point, I was selected, and it was a final interview to go meet with the governor.
Anybody check your background? They must have.
They did. After the selection was made, they checked my background.
I guess you have to get used to that if you want to be a judge, right?
Yes. It's incredibly important.
I don't know how one gets used to it, but you must be accustomed to it by now.
Oh, absolutely. No, I've had my background checked several times, so...
I guess it gets easier as the time goes on.
It does. Yeah, when I was a teacher, that was the first time, I guess, that I really had an intensive background check. And then I don't know how many other times since then. But
what was the day like when you were chosen?
I was very excited. I was elated. I mean, it was when I started the process, I thought, well, maybe I have a chance, but I didn't know. And then as I started to move along in the process and I talked to other judges about what the job was and just about me and my experience, I realized that I actually was a very good fit for the job, and that would come out in the interview process, that they would see what other people that I had talked to were seeing. And so that was really rewarding, too.
Who do you think is more fair? No, that's the wrong question. Are women and men judges equally fair, or are they drawn by different motivations?
I wouldn't draw a line by gender. I think that it really depends on the person. And there's so much that goes into that. It starts from the very beginning, and some of it can be genetic, and some of it can be situational, cultural, family, experiences. There's so much that goes into it, so I wouldn't be able to draw that line.
Speaking off the air, you mentioned that you were appointed by the governor, and a lot of people think that represents a political appointment. Explain why it doesn't.
Because we are nonpartisan, and we're not allowed to even talk about politics. Even judicial candidates aren't supposed to talk about politics and issues.
So even the governor didn't know what your background was?
No. I don't think they looked at – well, I don't know how they could have. I had never been involved politically in any way. There would never have been anything to look at, and there weren't questions that were asked that would be related to that. So it's I just don't think that factored into the decision.
So it doesn't apply. No, I was just considering the perception.
The perception is there. I definitely have had people think that because of the appointment, it must have been. Some people don't know that it was an application process. Some people think he just chose me. Well, he didn't know who I was. I mean, he knew who I was when I entered into his office for the interview, but before that, he didn't know who I was. So it was an application, and they looked at who's. What are my qualifications? What is the work that I've done? And I think it's interesting, too, because if you look at the work that I've done, it's all across the board. I had done a lot of corporate litigation. I had done some plaintiff's work. So it goes kind of on all ends of the spectrum. I don't think that you could really categorize me in a certain way by looking at my work experience or anything that I've done.
One thing came up with a friend of mine. He didn't graduate from the college that was on his resume. It didn't say BA. It just said that he attended the school, and it implied that he graduated, but he didn't. And that's okay with me. But It was used later against him in a claim against his boss. They said, if he will lie about this, he will lie about anything. Now, is that a good argument in court? Is that convincing?
That is it. Actually, it's very interesting. So, for example, in a criminal trial, you're not allowed to bring in evidence of somebody's past convictions unless it's a crime of dishonesty. A crime of dishonesty can come in because that can go to the credibility of the witness.
So it is important.
It is important. Yes. If historically you've lied about something, then it will go to your credibility later on.
Even though many people don't think of that as what they do with a resume is not necessarily a testament of truth nor a lie in the grandest sense. But it is. It represents an ability to shade the truth.
It's an intentional omission. The implication is there. I don't know specifically about that type of a situation. I don't know that that would ever come up in court. But I do know that people will consider that in terms of the credibility of somebody and whether they think they can be honest.
And if one attorney can question the honesty of a person, regardless of what they're charged with, that's an important point to make.
It is, yes. Well, because many times we're in court and one side's saying one thing and the other side's saying the exact opposite, and you have to make a determination, okay, somebody's not telling the truth here. Who is it?
And that happens all day long, right?
It does.
Kristen Ferreira is our guest. She's running for the Superior Court judgeship here in Chelan County. You'll have to vote on November 6th. And that brings up another point before I was going to push the button for commercials. What do you think of people who have come to the conclusion that they don't have to vote to participate in democracy?
I really feel very strongly that people need to vote. It's incredibly important, especially at our local level. There have been some elections that were lost or won by just over 100 votes. There are very small margins of winning sometimes, and that every vote will absolutely matter at the local level. It matters at the federal level as well, but at the local level, it can cause somebody to either win or lose.
Especially when some of these races locally are decided by less than 30,000 votes.
Right.
Total.
Exactly.
Extraordinary. We'll be back to talk with the Judge Ferreira right after these words.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com. News Radio 560.
Trade-ins. See us on Facebook or on our website at allseasonsrvsales.com. That's All Seasons RV on Highway 97A.
At Point S Tired Auto Service in Wenatchee, let them help you get your vehicle ready for
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
My special guest this afternoon is Kristen Ferreira. She's currently your judge for the Superior Court of Chelan County. She's running to stay in that seat, to stay at the bench, to stay in her black robes and presiding over the cases of the county. We're just about out of time, Judge Ferreira. If you could just ask the people that determine the fate of judges in this county for their vote.
Okay. Well, I would just ask you to vote for me in October, November. The ballots will actually come out the week of October 15th, and so you can vote anytime after that up until November 6th, and I ask that you vote for me. I'm doing a very good job in this position. I'm very passionate about this position, and I want to keep doing it. I want to keep working for Chelan County in this way, so I ask for your vote.
Her name is Kristen Ferreira. She's currently your judge, and she's running for election because she was appointed, so she hasn't run for re-election yet. Am I correct?
This is my first election, yes.
What do you think of running for office?
I actually do think I enjoy it. I like getting out into the community and talking to people. So I think it's important for judges actually to be able to connect with the community in that way.
Thank you very much for coming in. I tell everyone this. Good luck with your work.
Thank you.